Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi there. Mike here, voice of Tim Stoker from the Magnus Archives. And today, I'd like to invite you to listen to fiction from the shadows of an alternate Appalachia in Old Gods of Appalachia. Winner of Audioverse Awards, including Best New Storytelling Production and Best Writing of a New Storytelling Production, Old Gods of Appalachia is a non-linear, intricately woven Appalachian eldritch podcast brought to you by Deep Nerd Media. In this cosmic horror podcast, Appalachia is where hearts are good, hands are strong, and no one wants to talk about what sleeps beneath. Follow generations of granny witches and their families as they stand against the rising tide of the inner dark. Find Old Gods of Appalachia wherever you sip the wines of fine audio entertainment. Visit www.rustyquill.com or www.oldgodsofappalachia.com for more information.
Hello and welcome to this Magnus Archives Editor's Commentary episode. I'm Lowry and I produced the Magnus Archives from about midway of season four, not sure when I started actually. And with me, I have some of the editors who worked on the show. Would you like to introduce yourselves, editors?
Yes, hello, I'm Annie Fitch. I was a vocal editor for Magnus starting from the end of season four and running all the way through season five.
It's Elizabeth here, editor, I guess starting from season two, and then of course Visionary and Dreamweaver from season five onwards.
Yes.
And I'm the gremlin, the overvocal editor, and I took up around 166.
That's season five, right?
Yeah.
And we're still making you do vocal cut edits. You're welcome, Nico.
I don't really want to leave. This is my home now.
Yeah, so what we're doing here is, I mean, you probably gathered from the title, we're going to be listening to some episodes that these people have edited and just going to be chatting about them. I'm going to be taking a backseat because I didn't edit them, but I just wanted to be involved. Are we all ready to listen to some tracks?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Trip down memory lane.
Yes! Opening with it. This was my first episode that I ever edited.
And what is this?
This is 154, Bloody Mary.
Oh, right. Hello, again. Look, sorry, pal. A false alarm this time. Oh, unless... Peter! Look, Peter... John, God, don't do that.
Sorry, I just...
No, it's fine. You just surprised me. That's... Jesus, are you all right?
I just feel like I have to say that Annie is pulling some really nostalgic faces.
I'm kind of weak, hungry, I guess, sort of.
Did you say
I've been trying to avoid being sticking to old statements. Thank you for your little intervention, by the way. Look, I wouldn't have
had to... This is an episode with two swears in it. What the hey?
In the bloopers for this one, Alex did a little jingle about how we met our quota for season 4, and maybe season 5.
Has that made it into any of the blooper reels? I feel like it should.
The problem is that the song also involved the violent act that is described at the end of this episode as the way to quit the archive, and I think Alex felt weird singing about that and putting that out on a blooper. I think that was the final verdict on it.
Oh, that's very fair.
This one in particular, I have been itching to talk about since I edited it as my first edit, because I had so much fun specifically with the take selection in this conversation between John and Martin, because Alex had, you know, there's like 4 takes of this, and Alex did a variety of different kind of like emotional perspectives on it. And I got to cherry pick almost line by line the ones that made him the most like cruel to John. I really wanted to mess with people where if they really tried to listen to the detail, all of Alex's lines after the reveal are him being a little bit deliberately twisting the knife or just being mean about stuff, which I felt really fun to do that as the first edit.
I feel like that's so bold as well for your first edit. I love it.
Well, because, I mean, one of the things when Alex trained me was he was like, if I put a thing in the notes, take selection, do the one I say. Other than that, pick whatever, you know, make an executive decision and pick whatever you think sounds good. Because, you know, as a vocal editor, you're supposed to be like somewhat in control of that to whatever degree.
It's one of like the benefits of doing most of the vocal cuts during lockdown is that there's no mic bleed.
Right.
So what I imagine beforehand, you were kind of confined to their reactions. You now have like, you can make anything react off anything and make the length longer or shorter. It was incredibly daunting at the start, but by the end of it, it's like, aha,
yeah,
I'm going to make him incredibly awkward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in this one, this was pre-lockdown, but Johnny and Alex just talk so quietly when they're in studio that there was almost no bleed anyway. So it's right from this point onward is where I was very deliberately trying to be like, where's Alex being the most mean?
Yeah.
Because some of them, he was like really sad or like heartbroken. Or there was even a take where he was like, he did like the end of it as like a more sympathetic type thing. And I was like, nah, none of that. Martin's not being nice here.
Yeah. Well, I think Martin as a character always understood their relationship better than John did.
Yeah.
I think John always lies to himself a little bit about how he actually feels about things. So...
yeah.
I think like that ties back to Martin being part web or was chosen by the web at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the funniest thing about Martin, editing Martin, is that so much of him is everything he says outside the lines. So like all the stutters and the cracks and like the sighing. And I've always adored that the most about Martin. Like I never grew tired of editing Martin at all.
He's all inflection that, Alex.
You did the solo Martin episode as well, didn't you?
Oh, God. Yeah. I put that in a blooper reel somewhere where Alex just lost a plot by the end of that.
Is he here?
Oh, yes.
Up ahead.
Ah, this is a Nico choice, right?
The amount of takes Alex did for that whistle.
I hate it.
It's like you're trying to grow ugly. That won't do. You're better than that.
I really hate this.
See, what you can hear in the background there is a water feature, one of those bamboo ducking water things. I can't remember what they're called.
Ah.
And what I really wanted to put in, aside from that, is I thought Jared Hopworth could have been a chicken fancier. That was the dream.
A chicken fancier?
I think so. I think he absolutely would have been a chicken fancier in the apocalypse.
Down inside and really feel that fear.
Oh.
Let God out.
Alex wouldn't let me though. I did ask.
So unreasonable.
Buzz.
Jared Hopworth is like one of the fan favourites for like monster avatars or whatnot.
Yeah.
But more than that, like the setup for being just like a garden of, well, flesh. I was waiting to hear the soundscape for it because the soundscape just like, it nails it.
Yeah, it's horrible in the best way.
I always had a hard time with Hopworth. I always had a hard time with Jared because the first time he's voiced, I mostly listened to the show on headphones at work, and I work at a theme park, so it's quite loud where I am most of the time, which meant that this pitched down Alex voice in headphones with other noise going on, nearly unintelligible. It's not that it's not clear and everything, it's just that it's so low that it blends into the sort of general crowd hum.
Well, the first one is in the hallways, and it has that echo, and I think if you add the echo in it, you've got a little bit more muffling with it.
Yeah.
But also, Alex did about 10 different takes of, like, the whistling and whatnot, because he said in the recording, like, he knew this was going to be really hard to understand, because it's Jared. So he tried his normal voice, then his Cockney voice, and then, like, a ill Alex. And he actually was ill that day as well. So he started off kind of fresh, and his voice just deteriorated. He kind of hit a wall, and it was just, like, all croaky, horrible messiness.
If I recall correctly, I think he recorded this the day before he was supposed to be recording another just like normal Martin scene and then couldn't do the Martin, or at least either couldn't do it or like at the start was like, it's all right, my voice will come back. I was like, are you sure? We need to start now.
I vaguely knew who Jared was back then, but it's like I really wanted to know how we do half the monster voices and whatnot and what wizardry via the plugins and things we do. So I was really curious about Jared. And, like, obviously it's like we pitch it down and whatnot, but I was wondering how much was Alex and how much was the effects?
You know, like, it's very much based on, I think, the lowest you can get from the actor, and then you start pitching it down and potentially chorusing it or something else on top. But that was an Alex special. He had designed that before I started doing the sound effects. You know, I started that in season 5, so some of the stuff was always past him because it was like, well, you did it the first time. Like, you know what you did.
Tell me what you did.
My favourite thing for Daisy's death, Faye, is that somebody got them to record just animal noises. So there's like, there's just a recording of them making like all these growls and like wolf, monster, beast sounds.
They're so good at that.
Yeah, we had some of that. And then there was a really good sort of bear eating kind of noise or that someone else had made as well. So there's about 3 different things that was used for Daisy to make her more monstrous.
Right, let's get on with it then.
Oh, can you hear that wind? That wind sounds so nice.
Is this one of your choices, Elizabeth?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it is. But I'm just like, it's so hot today.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice?
It'd be worse.
I thought you were like, do you hear that soundtrack? God, it's good.
Worse, it got worse.
Martin,
much
be
worse.
Polite. Hello.
Pleasure, yes. Hello. I am Dr. Doe, Jane. Welcome into my hospital, Inspector.
Inspector?
You have come here to over-observe, yes? To Inspector.
I suppose so, yes.
Then follow. Let us tour our well-being center. Keep your screams inside, if you want to be polite.
Right.
The performer for Dr. Doe.
So good.
Was just so much
beautiful
fun.
Beautiful building.
So much fun. Me.
Well, even making them sort of more monstrous, it was actually like, just a slight, you know, tweak to...
Don't need to do
like,
much to it, huh?
Yeah, it was just like... Same pacing, just the performance was so good. It was a fun performance.
This one was fun to edit too because I got sort of a little bit of everything fun. I got scared Martin. I got a very stock John statement that was, you know, interesting and gross. And then Dr. Doe was so easy to edit. And then I also got to do Breakin.
Mabel Syrup was the actor for Dr. Doe.
Mm, that was it.
Yeah, she was great. So good.
It was one of the ones I remember being fun to do the SFX for because... Yeah, I mean, I just went hell for leather in terms of making it really like sores, you know, band sores. To give it that comparison to the other hospital, which had been much more about psychological kind of abuse in hospitals, whereas this was like quite physical abuse. But that meant you got to find loads of like nice sounds for that. And
yeah.
Also, I got to hand off to Alex, I think, 22 layers of audio.
Oh, wow.
I remember at the time he was like, there's no way you need this many layers. And he got to the end of it and he's like, oh yeah, okay.
This is the one I remember most clearly being on the RQO early access channel at the time it uploaded and just watching this sort of fur of people rolling in the live comments as it goes and like really hammering down. And everyone was just like, because I remember I was actually out at a restaurant picking up breakfast while people were listening to it. And I'm just scrolling on my phone. Every like third comment was like, oh, God, the soundscape. Why? Oh, I don't like this.
There was chanting of knife wife or scissor wife or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Knife wife was one of my favorite terms that came out of the show. Knife wife.
I'm so proud, Elizabeth, that you just like, this is the right thing to do. And like Alex was like, is it? Oh, yes, it is.
I think because initially I'm like, can I go really organic? And he's like, I don't know. And then I'm like, can I make her out of knives? And he was like, no. So like, maybe I just will anyway. Why not? So, I think she kind of works. It is interesting to think then of the evolution of those anatomy students is that some of them were like, I created a heart and I created blood flow and everything else. And now I've just inserted knives into all of me. That's how I live my life.
There was a lot of really interesting Easter eggs in this episode, too, because that's one of them that this is like an anatomy student, but it's never really directly referenced. There's also, I remember when they were doing notes, there's a few sentences that are very grammatically weird that come out of Dr. Doe. And there was a lot in the recording of like, can we make that weirder? Can we make that a little bit more uncomfortable? So like at the beginning, you heard the you're here to inspector thing. Mm. And Alex was very much like, no, that is not an error. Don't correct it. Say that because this is a person who's just slightly off, speaking just slightly wrong. And it just added the air of creepiness even more to it.
Mm. It's a really fun episode.
I think that's one of my favorites.
Now settle back. Try to look intentional.
What does that mean?
They're going to expect a suitable elaborate scene when they arrive. Monstrous to blow. I'd hate to disappoint Gemma. Them.
Right. So, were you thinking something like this or...
My apologies for the inconvenience, but appearances are everything, Martin. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to change into something more suitable.
It is so very important to prime your audience.
Annabelle Kane.
Hello, John. Vasira. Calm down, Martin. You wouldn't want to.
I love that we're all just listening.
Well, it's just such a good scene.
It feels so long ago, and yet also feels like no time has passed at the same time. Because 197, for me at least, was the longest one to edit. Mm. Just because there were so many different reactions going off after over everyone. We had to do two different takes because we didn't know how we were going to position them in the room. So there's some with like the shouting over as if it's a huge echoey chamber, and then there's other ones where we made it sound like they're all really close to each other. Elizabeth, you did so much prep for this episode.
Yeah.
Like, so much.
I knew that the spider area, like the giant web, and obviously the end scene with the panopticon kind of thing, they were sort of things that I was had my ear out for the background, kind of like what would the background be? They need to be kind of different. I think it was like the funnest background in that it's very staticky. It's very much the tape noises and the, to me, like little skittering spider noises. Yeah, I've got a really great sort of visual for that. And I think what I also remember as I was editing it was like, oh my God, Johnny set this up, that we knew that you could make these webs out of tape when we had that episode, the one about the filmmaker. All of this had been prepped in our head seasons ago, that a web made of tape and, well, partly made of tape was totally a thing. It's one of those moments where I just love the craft that he put into it. I think just those little things.
Yeah. Mm. I recently started my first re-listen through from the beginning in a very long time because I'm introducing some of my day job coworkers to the show. Getting through the first Hilltop Road episode, the one with Ivo Lensig, where he pulls down the tree and everything, I know that he didn't, that the plan for the end at that point changed a couple times from where he was. That's the first 10 episodes. So it wasn't really quite nailed down then. He just knew some things about it. But he hit so many different beats. That one episode singularly lays out at least one episode in all of the remaining seasons to come. There's at least one thing that is about things mentioned in that episode, including some of the stuff that's happening in this one. It's very, very interesting to listen back to, because like you said, it's just the Hilltop Road and the web had just so much setup poured into it, and just so well, just little bits here and there, putting it together the whole show up to this point.
I think I was silly because I missed, you know, there's the episode, I think, of the cleaner who goes basically into another dimension.
Yeah.
And for some reason in my brain, it never dawned on me that that's what had happened. And I was like, you know, she's missing all these people. It doesn't look quite right. And in my brain, I was like, oh, it's just a fear thing that's happening. No, she's now slipped into this alternative universe.
Oh. Oh, Christ, what now?
Sorry,
this is another of my favourites.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have made a statement before we got on the ladder.
That's not how it works.
Fine, I'm out then. You coming, Martin?
So my choice is to jump off a cliff or cling to it while John does a statement?
And then jump off it, yeah.
Right, yes.
Fuck's sake. Fine.
Okay.
Oh, Alex acting again.
On three. One.
I love the look on Lowry's face right now. She's freaking out.
Yeah. Or just go, then.
I remember listening to this first and being like, oh my God, I just felt every one of those jumps off the cliff.
Yeah. Frank absolutely murders this episode.
Down and down and down again. Rung after rung after rung to rung.
I picture Frank to react that way regardless if they were Basira or not anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, that is kind of true as well, yeah.
So this was my last episode that I edited. My first 154, my last is this one, 198. And I was actually very, very excited about that for a couple reasons, because this is the final John statement of the show, kind of. Because I don't really count the monologue in 200. I mean, it sort of is, but this is the last, just vanilla statement. This is just a statement. And it's also, my favorite power was always the Vast. And so ending the vanilla statements of the show on the Vast made me happy. And yeah, just like the bit where they're on the ladder there and they all go from these, you know, their normal Magnus takes where they're all close to the mic and very quiet and kind of fried out and everything to just being like, yeah, the ladder, yeah. You know, like way back and yelling from the mic. It was fun. And again, just Frank slayed every part of this episode that they were doing. It was so good.
In my brain, I was like, the thing that I had a little question about that I answered fairly quickly was actually, where is the tape player?
Hmm.
Apparently it lives with John, but importantly, John doesn't take a backpack to Hilltop Road. He is not a guy who brings a backpack along. Martin clearly does. Martin loses the backpack at the web. There's no more backpacks, guys. They're walking back without backpacks. So I'm like, where is the tape player? Is it kind of visualizing that? And you're like, well, I guess it's just attached to John some way, which means that when, of course, he jumps, the tape player's going with him, which meant that I got to do that great skydiving wind effect as he's heading down, which I really enjoyed.
I always picture Martin's backpack to be like Sam and Frodo in Lord of the Rings, just have a little cup hanging off and everything.
Yeah.
That jump of John, that's one of my favorite tape clicks in the whole series, is he goes, well, I guess that's it, jumps, and then you hear click. There's that nice fade in click.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, sounds so good. And then click. Oh.
Yeah.
And it was so weird, because then after editing this episode, I did the math and I vocal cut exactly 10% of this show, of the actual core 200 episodes.
Yeah.
I had exactly 20 vocal cuts done, and this was the 20th, so that was kind of nice.
That sounds so neat. I like to think that, Elizabeth, didn't we remind Johnny? Am I misremembering that?
I think what happened was he had said something that the episode was going to be set somewhere, and we're like, oh no, it's listed as this in the spreadsheet, and he was, oh yes, okay, it's going to be like this, it's going to be like a ladder. And then I remember at the time we were joking, oh well, you know, like we should make them jump, just jump off the cliff. And he was like,
I mean, he might have thought of it anyway, but I like to think that, you know, definitely yes.
Look, John, as fun as all this melodrama is enough, we both know that you don't have it in you.
That was for Sasha.
John, wait. For Tim. Please, John.
Don't.
And all the others. Please,
John. I don't want to die.
Neither did they. But no one escapes at the end.
Ah, Ben.
Got to add the really unrealistic knifing sound. You never hear a knife sound when you're being knifed.
Listeners, you may take great satisfaction in knowing that Alex made Ben die again and again and again and again.
Sitting in on this recording was great. Like, he was great every time, but it was...
burning retching of the smog, but hide. It is not real, but still it come falling through the pitch black dark.
That little bit at the end where John gets control possessed, what have you, I don't know the right technical term. Johnny's first take was like pretty much spot on. I'm assuming it's because he probably rehearsed that so many times off recording, off camera, whatnot.
I don't know if he did it secretly.
Yeah.
Because he recorded almost all of the statements for season 5 without a director, just by himself. I'm not sure if he did for the last one. I know I remember asking if he wanted Alex for that last one. I think he did it by himself.
He did get quite good at doing the statements by himself. His monologue statements, the way that they progressed through at-home recordings from a vocal editor perspective was really dramatic. Between when he was first at home just going, well, we'll see how this goes, to like, you know, by the time we did 198, it was like recording started. Hey, it's Johnny recording the statement for 198. You know the drill. Reading everything twice. Go. I think he thought and was right about not needing necessarily another set of ears on it, because he would just do it twice and give these little variations in there. There was always something usable.
I'm getting sucked into the jungle? Elizabeth?
The soundscape for this statement is just magnificent.
Yeah, freaking awesome.
As I think I've said it before, it's the first one where I actually get to do something that sounds a little bit beautiful rather than just supposed to be like basically a bit awful.
Yeah.
Because Salaces is, it's a country house, but there's only very quiet amount of birds. Yeah, I really enjoyed the statement part of this. The thing that really struck me earlier with this bit was actually, I remember asking Alex whether Elias, because I remember the death scene for Elias was quite long, and it was as long as there, basically. But when you get it without any like sound effects behind it, it's just like Ben going, ugh, I do remember like going back to Alex and going, is this actually like, do you want such a long death? And he's like, yep. So, because like, I was like, is it a little bit melodramatic? And I'm like, I guess in hindsight, I mean, it is the final death scene. So like,
yeah.
And then he says, I think the last words are supposed to be good luck, but he says it in such a way that it's like, I didn't even pick up until I read the transcript.
That was the thing, because like Ben did so many takes where he could hear it, and Alex said it and was like, okay, just give me one where people can't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then that's the one Alex wanted.
It's a difficult episode. We've got the Elias death at the start, then we've got, you know, the whole thing where John needs to... Is he transformed? Not quite, like, but there is some kind of power thing that happens, right?
What is he? Yeah, he says he becomes the pupil or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's never had like an effect applied to him other than static for when he's doing a bit of magicalness. So then it was like, well, how much do you apply an effect to him post becoming the pupil?
Mm-hmm.
Don't think I added much. I think there was just a little bit of chorusing on little bits. Then goes into that statement, which was completely different from what we had done previously.
Right.
Then we destroy the panopticon and then we go to an entirely different scene. So with an entirely different emotional energy. It's a pretty packed episode for probably like 22 minutes or something. Like,
It was very much like a hot seat almost thing, because like the first few scenes are so rapidly done. I mean, yes, the death of Elias, that's very Shatner-esque and that takes him forever to die. But apart from that, you have that happen. Then you have John tell Rosie just to go away. So then Rosie goes away and it's like, oh, hi, Hannah. First time editing you. Oh, okay, bye, Hannah. Never editing you again. Okay, bye. Then it's, oh, God, that scene with Martin just telling John off to no end. And I used to take Alex Wanted, but I took all the voice cracks out of every other take. Then you got the John monologue/statement. And then right at the very end is just the survivors. See, it was just like do 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 do.
Yeah.
My favorite memory of 200 was the all of the final scripts dropped a few weeks before the recordings. All the final scripts got uploaded, and it was like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning over here. I just couldn't sleep. I was just having insomnia, and I saw the ping that the scripts dropped, and then I immediately pinged Nico on Teams. It was like, Nico, 200 dropped. Read it with me.
Yeah,
I love that. To me, that is like, I would have been like, oh right, I got the scripts, right, I just need to let people know, and like not really realizing that it's such a big thing, just been like, yeah, 200's there.
The circle of people who knows what happens just grows bigger, because it starts off with like Johnny Knights and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then me and Annie were just like, who else can we talk to, who cares, because like, well, you don't listen to it, and Elizabeth was like super busy doing soundscaping, so it's just me and Annie in the DM just going like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I knew where we were going to,
yeah,
but I'd never really questioned exactly how the story was going to end, although I could tell, because I knew we were going to the tunnels, I knew we were going to the Panopticon, but then to Hilltop Road and then back to the Panopticon. But I didn't push from Johnny or Alex exactly how it was going to end. So like my first knowledge was because, yeah, I didn't go to the scripts because I was so busy doing the edits that were coming up, that my first thing would be listening to the vocal cut that I got sent and being like, oh, that's what happens. And I remember that happening when I did the vocal cut for 160. And like, you know, the world ending. And like, you know, I'm listening through, I'm making, you know, because I used to listen through and make sort of small cuts as I'm listening through the first time to just get rid of stuff I knew we weren't using. And then getting towards the end, I'm like, realizing what was about to happen and just like messaging Johnny and being like, I can't believe you did this.
A thing to note as well about the pandemic and whatnot is that we were asking for a lot of pickups, specifically from Johnny at the start. And very quickly it went from, I don't know how to DM Johnny. Johnny's like, he plays John and he's a writer and he's Johnny. And then very, very quickly it's like, Johnny, answer your DMs. I need you to be dramatic for this sentence again, please. Thank you. You get quite warmed and normal to him very quickly.
He's all right, isn't he?
He's more likely to say sorry for not getting onto something, you know, straight away. It'd be like, how dare you contact me?
How dare you disturb me? Yeah. Back to the editing dungeon.
I have enjoyed this so, so much. Thank you, everyone.
That was very fun.
I really liked it. It's been nice to reminisce.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us and listening. We hope you enjoyed. And it's bye from us all. And join us next week for some form of content that I'm not sure what it is at the moment, but it'll be there. It'll be there because we can't let these people go. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This episode is distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit rustyquill.com, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today, I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ Network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi, Alex here, founder and CEO of Rusty Quill Limited. In case you haven't heard, there is now a Magnus Archives novel. The Library of Jürgen Leitner is set in the world of the Magnus Archives and written by Nebula Award-winning author Premi Mohammed with our very own Jonathan Sims. The story follows Hugh, a university dropout, desperate to find somewhere to belong, and his new job at an esoteric library. The books he must investigate for the enigmatic Jürgen Leitner are not normal, because the library is not a vault, sealed and silent, but a hive, alive, buzzing, and ready to sting. The Library of Jürgen Leitner releases October 27th, 2026, but you can pre-order it right now in the US and UK from your local bookshop or by using the link in the episode description. If you live outside of the UK or US, you may be able to make an international order for this first publication, but it depends on individual retailers' shipping policies.